Welcome. Hi, Jay.
Is this Dave Weiner of Scripting News?
Something like that. Yeah, we always get off to a little bit of a rough start, and I think this week's no exception. We need to have, like, a jingle or something. Maybe we could both, like, sing the jingle at the same time.
Singing, I don't think, plays to our strengths.
I'm very good at singing, even though I'm not very good. So, we were just reciting off the names of some cities.
Yes, because you've been traveling, and you were in New York, and then you went up to Boston to Cambridge. Now you're back in the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. And I thought it would be good to start off with what you did in Cambridge. And I know you made a trip to see some friends of mine up at the Nieman Foundation, institution I've had a lot of connections with over the years. So I'd love to hear what happened there.
Well, let's see. I took a picture in a cafe in Harvard Square. And Zach, I'm so bad with names. Hold on.
Seward.
Yeah,
no.
That's it. Zach Seward. Zach Seward came over, only I had already left. And he left me an email. And I had really wanted to, unlike you, I had had no contact with them other than a few twits, about some conference that they had done. And, of course, I had been aware of Nieman. Actually, it's not true. They did a study when I was at Berkman. They did a study of the Trent Lott. They did a case study of Trent Lott as being the first example of bloggers actually having sort of real-world impact, and they interviewed me for that, which I thought it was very respectful. They came up with a good piece, and I was pleased with it. Since then, I think that my impression of Nieman, while they're, like, very professional and, that they've been more sort of in the curmudgeon mold, sort of justifying the tragedy of the downfall of journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And which is all too commonplace, and they're nice about it. I want to be careful because I like them. They were very warmly welcomed me. We had a great talk. We talked about a bunch of. We also set them up. I think we'll talk about this later. The 40 Twits app. I set them up as one of the sort of curators for that. But we had a.
Now, did you go see the Nieman Fellows or the Nieman Lab?
The Nieman Lab, yes.
It was
Josh Benton and Zach Seward. Just the three of us talked. And so they sort of come from our world in as much as anybody there does. And but sort of get to this place where, and this is something that I want to talk with you about, and I sort of want to. So how do you visualize the world after this hypothetical or collapse of newspapers? Well, as we reconstitute ourselves, what will this world look like? And it was interesting because very often when you raise that question, what you hear is sort of like a brick wall that it just can't go through that wall. But yet, as we more and more contemplate this actually happening, you got to sort of use your imagination a little bit as to what would it look like.
And sure. And what happened? I would love to hear what they said, but I know exactly what you mean. And I'm certainly aware of the two sides of the wall.
Right.
But I don't let it stop me.
No, you don't. And that's one of the reasons why we have such interesting conversations, because we don't get stuck right there. What I said was, they didn't want to, or I don't know how, I can't characterize their mindset, but nothing came out when I asked the question. So I posited that if you look at it, the components, if it's like everything else, it'll take a while for it to shake out. But once it does, when you look back at this moment in time, what you'll see is something that in the new system, it looks very much like the old. Except the cards have been dealt a little bit differently. Things that were paid for before aren't paid for in the new model, and some things that weren't paid before are now paid. You know, the money flows in a different way, or maybe there's no money. But whatever happens, there's going to be news, and sources will still find a way. If they need anonymity, they'll find a way to get it out with anonymity. If they don't need it, then we'll have to figure out a way to do this curatorship. And they asked me, they said, you know, what is this, you know, how are we going to do it? I said, well, but you've been watching us do it. I mean, that's what we've been doing with the 40 Twits thing. That is curatorship. Now, you know, let's go a few more steps and think about where we would be then, you know. It was an interesting conversation. It didn't get, nothing really got resolved, but other than we like each other and we're going to keep talking.
Well, let me say a word about the Neiman Lab and then address your question myself. I think they're doing very good work, and that institution, which is a mid-career fellowship for people in the news business, which also has an international wing, is an important institution in that people are picked who are, you know, young leaders, and often they go on to be executives and decision makers in the industry. So an example would be Melanie Sill, who I met when I was at Harvard, who's now the editor of the Sacramento Bee. And Josh himself is an example. So they made a very conscious turn with both Neiman Reports, which is their publication, their magazine, which has a very good reputation in a small world of professional journalists, and with Neiman Lab even more so, to fully engage with the new technologies and to be creative and far-searching in how they go at it. And I think intellectually they have succeeded very well in broadening the scope while still being an important institution to the middle stream of the craft. So I think they're doing a very good job.
Well, before you go on, let me ask you, where are the bloggers? Are there any bloggers in there? Do they give mid-career fellowships to bloggers?
They would in their current incarnation, they would be open to that. They haven't, I wouldn't say they've gone the affirmative action route yet on it, but I think that if the right person approached them, that they would, in fact, be open to that. I wrote a post about a competing program at my blog at Stanford, which fully embraced the kind of a more entrepreneurial Silicon Valley influence kind of thing. And they haven't done that, but they have done something way more interesting with Neiman Lab, their report. And as you say, they're fully engaged on Twitter, social media. They're very much there, and they're making a very important contribution. So it's good that you went to see them. Now, on this question, I tried to provide a way to make your question, like, what does the new system actually look like? Let's jump into it first. A more vivid and tangible thing with my metaphor of migration, of forced migration. And in that image, the press tribe, as I call it, has decided, has come to a point of decision where it can't live on the land that it has lived on all these years, that it's so successfully colonized. And it has to migrate, not because it necessarily wants to. It loved the old continent, but it cannot sustain itself on that land anymore. And so it's got to migrate across the divide to a new platform, to the digital world. And it faces many challenges there. One of the first ones is that people are already there, building a new civilization, building a new system for news, like you said. Right. It started for a long time. You're one of them. You know, Arianna Huffington is one of them. Glenn Reynolds is one of them. Rebecca Blood is one of them, right? So there's people already there, tons of them, who are developing the web. And land is free in the sense that the web is open, right? The system runs in different pipes. As you said, you can't get paid the same way. There's no real economy yet, right? Because you're migrating to a new land. And I use this image also to try and sympathize, but also vivify the trauma that professional journalists are faced with, because migration is a very hard thing, Dave. We sentimentalize it.
Are
in
they
America.
So sympathetic? I mean, I have found them. I mean, it's so funny. We have to bend over so far to accommodate these people as if they're children, or you know, they're very fragile and You know, they.
No, I don't see it that way. Well, I don't see it that way.
I worry about that because we seem to spend so much energy on this. You know, mourning the. I mean, Bill Moyers had a. You know, I have world respect for Bill Moyers, but when it comes to this subject, I think he's a sap. You know, he can address every other issue dispassionately, but when it comes to journalism, it's not. It's a. He won't go into the solution. He won't go into describing the land that you're talking about, the new land that they're on, or, you know, what are some of the things that we've discovered about this place? They don't talk about that. He had David Simon on this week, the authors of The Wire, who I admire. I admire both these people tremendously, Moyers and Simon. I'm a big fan of The Wire.
Me too. Yeah, me too.
Simon, in the first part of the interview, he talks about how inadequate the press, the journalists in Baltimore were, that they just simply couldn't, they couldn't deal with the real problems of the city. They could only deal with little facets of them, and the victories were meaningless victories. But yet, by the end of the show, he's talking about what a, you know, how wonderful it would be to be a politician in this with no journalist watching you. I mean, but it doesn't add up. I mean, the two worlds he describes don't sound at all like the same world, you know? So I don't know why. You tell me, why do we have to, why can't we be dispassionate about it? Why do we have to be sympathetic to the journalist?
You don't have to. I wouldn't tell anyone else they have to.
Why do you choose to?
For lots of different reasons. One is, I think there is a genuine loss. There's a loss of a way of life. There's a loss of talent and loss of incredible knowledge in some cases. So there's that. And I think, as I said, I was trying to describe with my metaphor of migration, it's a hard thing to do. It's hard to pull up your life. It's hard to ask yourself what's going to be
How long do we have to do this, Jay?
Now, wait a minute. I hold it. I said you didn't have to do it. I said you do not have to do it. Okay, now let's jump out of that, because that's like I do, because I'm a journalism professor. I have students who want to work in this world. I have to keep in touch with what is great about journalism, and I have to keep in touch with professional journalists on their journey. Now, I want to jump into this new world because I think if we shift the lens over to okay, the new continent, then what do we see there, even before we even add the journalists in, right? Like, leave them out for a second. Like, what do we see?
You tell me. What do we see?
Well, I think it starts with, to put it crudely, different pipes, right? There's a different infrastructure for communication. And it's not arranged in a one-to-many or broadcasting fashion.
Right.
It's very efficient for centralized communication. You can definitely use this system to send out an alert from HQ, right? Yes. But it is not constructed for that purpose. For one thing, the people at the margins, the people at the edges of the network, are very able to connect with other people at the edges of the network. And they can find their own common space, regardless of whether the media knows about it, cares about it, or thinks it's important. And so that's number one. And people can, our producers, like we've said it a million times, right? The powers in that world have been distributed differently. There's still the power of the media. There's still power laws, right? But they're just arranged in a different way, right? So you're starting with different infrastructure. That's number one. You're starting with different gates, just like a big private park turned into a big public park, right? It's got different rules of access, different points of entry. It's there are new ways for people to meet each other and share information, right? That's new. There's a different economy, all these things. But there's still freedom of the press. There's still a democracy with tons of problems, right? There's still celebrities. So you have many more players. And you have this new system that we've been working out with Twitter where we have kind of an extended news net that's capable of forwarding to lots of attuned people, what's happening now? What's news now, right? So, you know, you can start to describe. And if the news system fell, you would start to see something arise just because the tools for people to alert each other about stuff they need to know about are just sitting right there, and people wouldn't need instructions. I mean, they would start to communicate, right? So, I mean, in that sense, I think what's exciting about it is like you're building a new house and you've got this incredibly rich structure to build on. And it's more open than the old one.
Yes. So, that's all you have to say? You don't have anything more to say?
Well, that's a start. So what I'm saying, when I think about the new system of news, I don't start with how is the Cleveland Plain Dealer going to survive in the wet, right?
Absolutely. Key point. And that was the thing Simon kept coming back to was, yeah, they'll figure it out, and then they'll all get back together over the, you know, the old club will get back together over on the other side of this. And I don't think that ever works that way. I mean, I've seen these transitions a number of times in my career because my art, my science, my business, whatever you want to call it, goes through this transformation, it seems like, once every decade, if not more often. You know,
right.
It throws everything up in the air. And by the way, Jay, a lot gets lost every time we do this. It really drives me crazy about how, so many of the things we learned in the graphic user interface level when that was coming online got thrown out when we went to the web. That's why Apple hated the web when it first came along, because and they were right in a way to do it, you know.
So how many times have you gone through this, you're saying, in Tech Industry? Like how many cycles?
Well, okay, let's start with...
Just put an estimate on it.
Well, I could very briefly give you a recap, okay?
So okay.
I started when I was an undergrad working on mainframe computers, and then as a grad... Then I left and went to work in the timesharing business, which was, you know, these huge warehouse-size... factory-style computing, and where you rent time on the computer. Then I left there and went to grad school, where we all shared a mini-computer and a mainframe, and eventually you got your own mini-computer, which was my first personal computer. Then I left, then I got a CPM machine, and that was the major... So we're now in the major overhaul thing. You know? And then there was the change from that to... The mass market personal computer was the Apple II, then the IBM PC, then the Macintosh. Each one of those, a lot was conserved, and others, like the change from character-based to graphic user interface, so much change that you might as well say that it was a complete reboot. And then desktop publishing, which was evolutionary, and then the web, which was more or less a discontinuity where we threw out everything we had learned in the 80s. And I did it willingly because we were at a dead end. I mean, we could not grow anymore because of a lot of the problems that are popping up now in the blogging world and around Twitter of all places, because there's this, and it all comes back to journalism, by the way, FYI, because our journalism in the tech industry tends to, as a layer gets mature, the journalists tend to become deeply embedded with the industry. They play footsie. There's all this.
Well, in government, they call it regulatory capture.
I've never heard that term. It's disgusting. It is, and if anybody studied the history of it, what they would realize is that this is, you're planting the seeds of the downfall when you do this, because you know you don't get I'd argue, and I wrote today about this, is that it probably can't happen now. Because we have this blogging layer in place, that it once you get this sort of what's the right word? It's like arthritic almost. It's like you get this lock in where you know the pseudo journalist is you know doing stuff to please the industrialist and never mind the users. Sooner or later, the users get hip to it and they reboot and they just change everything. So
I got to go back to something you said.
Sure.
I counted your platform revolutions, and I thought there was maybe 10 or 11 in there.
Uh-huh.
The start.
There are minor ones and major ones, okay? So
okay, yeah. But let's say major and minor mix, 10 or 11 reboots, right? Your average journalist has been 0 to 1.
Right.
So you're saying you don't have sympathy for these people going through this?
Well, I do, okay? Of course I do. And I've
said... Well, it's 11 to 1, Dave.
Well, but the point is this, okay? Is you have to take a step back at some point and say, well, you know, journalism is important, but it's not everything, okay? And journalism has, right? I mean, all right, it sounds ridiculous, but at some point I have to say, I'm holding
your hand. Well, it's their livelihood.
I'm looking in your eye, and I'm holding your hand, and I'm saying, I understand it hurts, but, you know, there's a world out there.
Okay.
And in fact, you know, if your doctor acted this way, Jay, we would be up in arms. You know, the doctor is afraid that something's changing about medicine, and while that's happening, I'm sorry, but we can't cure
disease. Yeah, right.
Disease.
We still need doctors.
That's right. We still need journalism. And the fact that it... So basically, journalism's responsibility here, I think we're finally getting to my point at least, is that its responsibility is to keep its own downfall in perspective. Not to... and it is terrible at doing that. It's understandable that they do it that way, but they have this particular thing where they've controlled. It's almost pathetic now because.
All right, I want to get off this though. I really do. Right. I understand your point. I want to get off complaining about journalists and get on to something.
You're okay. It's not you. I'm not complaining about you.
I know.
Think you're. It's more like, you know. Well, okay. Let's get off it. All right. Yeah. Sorry, I said a bad word there. Go ahead.
I think they're stuck in sometimes in their ways, and we just have to go on in our work, and we have to convince them. So we have to go on our work. Like, and your work and my work sometimes intersect, and they did this week, which is something I wanted to talk about.
We got to talk about Oprah because you were right on that topic. You were talking about centralized stuff
interacting
with our world.
Right.
What's more centralized than Oprah? I mean,
she's mass media all the way, sure.
100%.
And so.
But yeah, she's one of the good guys, right? I mean, we sort of feel that way. I feel that way. I feel like Oprah's one of the good guys. No?
Oh. Well, I look at her more like a politician. It's like she's a force, you know?
Right. Okay, fair enough. She's like a force.
Yeah.
She's coming in here and... I honestly don't think she has the first clue as to that whole process that you talked about how it's the person-to-person connection that makes this medium different, right?
No, I wouldn't think she would. So what? So, you know, it's like, this is mass media. I mean, this is celebrity. This
but
is,
play
you know,
it
it's
out,
like,
but play it
know
out.
What celebrity is.
But play it out, okay? So now she's going to, if she just drops it now, then none of this matters, okay? But suppose she stays with this, as she often does with these things, you know. It becomes a recurring theme, and she's integrated Twitter in with her, sort of like how to live her life.
It's totally possible that she will, start...
But the point is that her experience will be very different from the experience of her followers. Of the people.
Totally.
Right. How will that get reconciled? In other words, when she reads a book, Jay, and they all read the same book, they have a common experience, and they can talk about it, right?
But wait a minute. Twitter is configured for communication inequality.
It is, but they're going to talk about... Listen, hear me out, okay? When she talks about Twitter, she's going to be talking about a different experience from the experience that her audience does.
Yes.
They're going to get on Twitter, and they're going to have the opposite problem she has.
Yeah,
How's
that's
anybody
right.
going to hear me?
She's not going to be a representative Twitterer, that's for sure.
But let me tell you something, Jay, okay? I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but, I was one of the original evangelists for blogging, right? And so I would go everywhere I went and say, look, you got to blog. You got to blog this. You got this idea. You have to blog it. Don't tell me.
I know. I talked to some of the people you talked into.
Exactly, right. And so now here's the complaint those people have, okay? And I heard it. There was a backlash, all right? And the backlash goes like this. Well, shoot, everybody reads your blog, Dave, but nobody's reading my blog. Well, she's going to get that, Jay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all.
It's celebrity. Yeah, okay. So let's watch.
Yeah, okay, we'll watch. All right, we'll talk about that in 3 or 4 or 10 weeks or maybe never. Okay.
Well, I know. I think this could be a major thing, Dave. I mean, I think Oprah could be a force on Twitter and change it. And, you know, celebrity comes to Twitter. But I just don't know of any way to stop these things from happening. I mean, what have celebrities not gotten into?
I don't know. I'm glad it will happen because maybe old Oprah's eyes will – I mean, old. I'm older than she is, okay? So it's like – or we're the same age or something. But maybe Oprah's eyes will open. You see, this is what I hope. And that she'll see, oh, my God. You know, maybe this is something we can do some good with, and you know, and turn this. Maybe she'll get the epiphany. You know, that this is an environment that has some new power to it, and you know, maybe she'll. I don't know. It's possible that something wonderful is about to happen. Is what I'm saying. That's
really. Oh,
I think.
All
so.
Right. Well, I am more in the. This is a blank slate. Let's wait and see thing.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I'm with you on that too. Yeah.
I want to talk about something that you build. I was going to say sometimes our worlds overlap, and they did when you came out with this simple script for collecting the top tweets that you send out during the week. And you built one for yourself and I guess for somebody else, and then you gave one to me, and you're going to give one, you gave one to the Neiman Lab. Yeah. And all it is a list of top 20 or top 40 links sent out through our Twitter accounts, ranked by recency and by number of people who followed those links, correct?
More or less, yeah. That's about it. Yep.
So I've been using it, and I have some impressions for you as the creator of this little tool, but I wanted to know what you had in mind when you created it, and like what is it, and what's the name for it?
Well, I'm calling it the 40 Twits app, and in fact, I bought 40twits.com because I think that actually is the name. It's going to stick. And it's sort of a nice number. I like the number 40 because I like 40-minute podcasts. And you remember they had the top 40 list and, you know.
Radio.
Yeah, radio, right.
Absolutely. I totally remember top 40 radio. Yeah. WABC.
You got it. I grew up in New York, too. WABC.
But I didn't grow up in New York. I just knew about WABC from way over in Buffalo.
Well, you probably got it. It was a clear channel station, I think.
Exactly.
Cousin Brucey, right? And, yeah, so you had the top 40, and it's just, I like the number 40. So, and I don't know. I don't remember the process now. You know, it's like one of these things where I just decided I wanted to track the flow of my, you know, links. And, you know, I think there's a big difference between a tweet that is just a thought, you know, like, okay, I'm taking a bath, or I'm eating some spaghetti, or I'm on an airplane. I had a great experience. I was twittering while I was flying cross country yesterday, and they have Wi-Fi on American Airlines now. So that was really cool. There's a difference between that kind of twittering, and then there's the okay, I'm shooting this link out to the people who follow me because I want them to read this, and I want to know sort of what they think about this. And there's a limit to how much you can get back from people and how much they're willing to tell you, actually, because the channel, when you have 21,000 followers, is really inefficient at conversation. As much as a lot of people think that Twitter is about conversation, if you play it out, if you start having conversations in front of everybody, it gets out of control really quickly. In terms of people start complaining that you're Twittering too much, you know?
I would never say it's conversational in myself.
Right. I don't think it is. It's something else. And as Rex Hammack has been saying lately, if you think you know what Twitter is, you're wrong. And anybody who says they know what Twitter is for doesn't know. And you know, I believe, actually, totally believe that he's right. But I think I can tell you some of the things that it's not for. Any case.
So back to the tool, top 40.
So the idea is that one way to get an idea of what works for people and what doesn't work is to find out how many times they click through. And there was this URL shortener called tr.im that had done a really good job of providing the data interface that I had been looking for from Bitly, which was a company that for a while I owned some stock in, and I don't anymore. But for whatever reason, Bitly didn't give me what I was looking for. But these guys, without me ever talking to them, had done exactly what I was looking for. So then I said, I want to try this, see what happens. And I loved it. I just thought it was fantastic. And so did, this is the thing that I watch for, so did the people that were using, are following me on Twitter. And here's the really cool thing. Now, I've been trying to get the sort of situation where other people would do what I was doing here. I had this thing called News Junk. that I was doing during the election, where I was doing more or less the same thing, pushing links out about, you know, following the election. I think that objectively we had the best flow of news stories coming out during the election on the internet, okay? I think we had better than MSNBC, better than CNN.
So it was curating.
Right, but the problem was I couldn't get anybody to work with me on it. Or
right, curating for whom? Curating with whom?
Well, right, and the with whom part is was the hard part. Well, I think we've cracked that one. Now people want to do this. I've gotten a tool to do it. I've gotten you to do it. I've got the Neiman guys to do it. And I've got you guys all thinking that I'm doing you a favor by letting you do this. And it flips it around, because before I had the opposite problem. And you see this so much in the internet, is where the problems just flip themselves around. And, you know, it's like you've got to look for situations where, you know, well, we can talk about this another time. It's a philosophical question, but it's a good one, because if people are willing to do one thing and really banging down your door to do that one thing, and but that's not what you want them to do, they're doing something else, try to change your wants.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, it's a small
idea. That is the key to open source work.
I think it's the key to life, actually. All right. So, you know, look and see what's available to you, and see if you can't make what you want work with that. And so News Junk was like endless frustration for me, and this thing's a joy, okay? So, I think I'm going to stick with it. So I think in the next the rankings are absolutely fascinating. I think everybody finds that.
Yeah, you want a user report?
Yes, I do in a second, okay? I just want to say that my plan now is I'm going to create a new server just for this, and I'm going to get ready to offer it to, let's say, 100 people, okay? Mm-hmm. And then what's going to be interesting, I think, and this is planting a little seed, obviously not just in your mind, but anybody else who's listening, is that now the question is going to be, what do we want to do with the aggregate, okay? Say you've got 100 people pushing links out this way. Mm-hmm. That's going to be an interesting data flow, okay? And the question is, what do we do with that? And I don't have the answer yet. But, you know, I'm getting ready to have a little lab here where we can experiment with that.
Right.
So now you're
very interesting.
Feedback. Hello?
Are you there? I just lost you for a second.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
All right. Naturally, I just started studying what showed up and how things moved on the list, and the list tells me how many people are clicking these posts. And some of the early discoveries were, the best one was that people are very interested in when I link to my work. And those were some of the higher ranked items, which is good. I mean, an author feels that's good news.
Yes, yes, they're interested in you, right?
Yeah, at least it seemed that way if you're reading the numbers, right?
That makes sense.
Secondly, that news about Twitter, as one would imagine, has by definition the largest audience, right? Potential audience, because everyone who's on Twitter is interested in Twitter.
Didn't Marshall McLuhan say something about that?
So I wasn't surprised by that. Washington politics often moves high, and so does anything having to do with the culture war or bloggers versus journalists. Mm-hmm. A couple of other observations. It's user-curated version of my feed. That's one way I've thought about it.
What do you mean by that?
Well, we're talking about the art of curation, right?
Yes.
In that's the part of the new news system that we're investigating in a more microscopic fashion right now through looking at this tool.
Yes.
So the question of News Junk was, okay, well, that was curation, but curation really is something that's best done socially or in groups or for groups. And so now we're moving, and Twitter is allowing us to be more social about it. By looking at my list, I'm not curating that list, right?
Well, Twitter, it's a combination. You are, and they are as well. They're,
right.
They're ranking okay. it for you, right?
Okay, user ranked, right? Okay, so anyway, that's I'm thinking of it as this is the cut of the users on it, because I have my own favorites, you know, which would be different.
Right.
But it's also teaching me sort of about another thing. Sometimes items move up the list because of when I'm tweeting them.
Yes.
And sometimes it's what I'm tweeting, and sometimes it's that I'm tweeting it. And those are three different kinds of value. So that's a first initial report, and I like it. I want to go to 40.
Oh, okay. Anytime.
And it's teaching me, because it's a much more feedback than I had before. It's like 20 times as much feedback as I had before. Mm-hmm. It's just making me think about what I'm doing more in the way that, you know, new dials and gauges do.
Always. Numbers are always – I always have that effect. You know, it may sound crass to some people, but to me, once I get some numbers, then I can start optimizing. I can start understanding, you know. There's another thing, by the way. I was thought you were going to say you had your three things. I would add a fourth that I've learned. Is that often it depends on how I worded something or what did I pull out of that to entice them to click, you know?
Yes.
And this is something I've been doing, you know, I've been doing this link blogging stuff now since, I guess, 1997, so it's like about 12 years. And so, you know, people sometimes would complain about, you didn't give me enough information to know whether I should click on it. I said, yeah, fine, but did you click on it, you know? And the answer is, sure. If you tease well, people actually like that. They say they hate it, but they like it.
You're very, very good at it, and I've studied the way you did it, and I incorporated it into my own style.
Right,
and
but now there is something I need to do for you, right? And you've been very kind in not saying that on the podcast, is that you need to be able to put your links in the middle of the post, right? And
I need to be able to move them around, and yeah. I need to be able to do more than one.
The more than one you'll be able to do, but I'm probably only going to track one. But we'll talk about that. I can certainly as the next step. Which one do you want me to track? Or you want me to track them both?
Ideally both, but if it has to be one.
Yeah, right. But which one is the one that determines the ranking of that post, though? Or should I add them both together or what? I mean, how would you like that to work?
I want them ranked by links, not posts.
Oh, interesting. Okay. That might make it. Okay, well.
You said it was links.
It is links. We always run into this, you know. We have the same, I got to say, you know, RSS has this, for podcasting, you have this element called the enclosure element, right?
Right, the enclosure,
the
right.
The enclosure, right? And so basically,
the enclosure, right.
Each item has an enclosure, right? And that means you can put a title on mm-hmm. every podcast, and you can put the date that it was published and who the author was, and you can categorize it and all the rest of this stuff. And then, of course, people said, well, I want to put more than one enclosure on there. Okay. Oh, great. Now, how do I specify the title for the first
one? Uh-huh, you know, uh-huh.
Because I have this wonderful encapsulation there, this thing that allows me to put every one of these pieces of metadata on this thing. Now, if I've got two, you know, it's like, it's this trade-off. That now you're in trade-off territory, and software design is all about trade-offs. You know.
Well, then make it the second one.
Okay. And then, of course, a tool will want it to be the first one.
Or you have the same tweet, but it's a different URL.
Something will happen here, and no matter what, somebody will curse the software, and I'm okay with that. It's just,
all right, I'm just giving you a user report. I'm just a dumb old user.
You're a wonderful user, Jay. I gotta say, everybody should be like you, which is, you know, you can have a good laugh at this stuff because it all sucks, right? It's, you know, I have this motto that actually is starting to catch on, which is, we make shitty software with bugs. And it came from my first company, and it was an important thing to realize so that nobody gets any ideas about how, you know, we don't know that our software is, you know, causing the problem.
Yeah, right. Right.
And we're not going to argue with you about that. First, let's figure out how to fix it, and then, you know, and then we'll try to make it less shitty next time. And we will, mm-hmm. but it'll still be shitty, you know. So
I want to inaugurate a new feature in our podcast.
Oh, great. What's that?
Sources of inspiration.
Oh.
Meaning, we, I want to be able to talk about sources of inspiration for the new system of news that we've been trying to struggle towards. Uh-huh. And one way to get over the wall that you talked about, one way to get around the brick wall, right? One way to get past how do we recreate the plea and claim dealer is to go to sources of inspiration for the new system, right?
Right. Awesome. That's great.
So one of them for me goes back to the mid-80s and this British television show that ran for a while called Max Headroom, which was way, way, way ahead of its time. And what people who were casually aware of Max Headroom remember about it is that there was a computer-generated character called Max who was had sort of gotten loose in sort of like the genie escapes from the bottle sort of way. Mm-hmm. But the show was really not about that. That was more of a gimmick. The show was really about Edison Carter, who was a TV reporter. And he had a huge following. And he had the idea of the mobile live journalist down cold. And so Edison Carter had his own equipment. He traveled and found outrages and important, horrible things going on out there. And he would go live over Channel 1, I think it was called, which was not only like all three networks combined, but all three networks combined with General Motors, Citibank, the CIA, you know. It was like a really big company, right? So, but Edison Carter was almost its equal because the company ran completely on the advertising juice of its programming, which was what fed all the rest of it, and he had a huge audience. So they couldn't really fuck with him, right? and anytime he needed to go live, he could. So he had what they called a controller. And the controller was a comely brunette, beautiful woman, back at headquarters. And she had headphones on, and she was sitting in front of a computer terminal, right? Uh-huh. And he was in constant contact with her. But what she was the web. She was the data sphere. She was the network that we have now. And so Edison Carter was the first web reporter, and it was brought to life in this show, not through imagining the web so much as this combination of people, one person in charge of the data sphere, the other person in the field reporting live, right? And what we've added to that, which is even better than Max Headroom, is that we not only have a controller with access to the data sphere, we have a whole network of people out there, right?
Yes.
That can help. And so I think we're coming close to the point where the Max Headroom, where the Edison Carter model is actually real. That is, reporters in the field backed by networks of knowledge can be incredibly effective, way more effective than they could just as researchers or witnesses or clerks of fact, you know? Yeah. And so by going, I think, outside the frame, by going outside the industry, by going before the web, by, you know what I mean? By going to pre-web sources, we can often find the images we need to start building the new system of news, at least as a scale model in our heads first.
No, that's very valuable because it sort of gets us out of the mode of focused on what the problem is and just imagining what
sources of inspiration for a booted system of news. That's a new feature.
I got something that builds on that, okay? I got two things, and then we got to go because we're at 43 minutes now, okay? But that was beautiful, and I'm going to work on more sources of inspiration, and we got to do that like every week. It's a great idea. Okay, so first of all, I think we have a name for this podcast now. I think we're calling it Rebooting Journalism.
Rebooting the news is much better.
Okay, rebooting the news.
Way better.
Did I call it rebooting journalism on the...
Yeah.
I did. I'll change it.
That's because I took the news, the room rebooting the news, because I created...
It's okay. I can call it whatever I want. It'll still have that funky URL that I gave it originally. It won't matter. It's just the link will stay the same. The name will change. So So I'll call it Rebooting the News. Now, the second thing was, when I was in Boston, right, and as we know, I went traveling all over the United States on this trip that I took, and that included Boston. The first meeting I had with my friend Nico Millet, he's a wonderfully smart guy, and he also works on campaigns, and he teaches at the Kennedy School, and he was part of the Dean campaign, key guy on the internet for the Dean campaign, and he's doing some work for a guy named Flaherty, I think. He's a challenger for Thomas Menino in Boston. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to try to keep this really quick. And they're having, and Menino is the longest serving mayor in Boston's history.
Right.
And but this new guy is posing a serious challenge. At the same time, the Boston Globe, which is like, you know, the leading paper, I think the Herald too, neither of them has a reporter assigned to this story. They're having a mayoral election this year in Boston, and the local news is disappearing, and they're not covering it. So the question is this an opportunity to organize, and if so, how would you do it? And this is sort of a thought thing. Is this the opportunity to cover a real story with volunteer amateur resources amongst the political bloggers in the city of Boston?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we did similar stuff. Boston's an interesting place. We did some similar kinds of things in 2003 and 2004 when we were booting up, when there were no bloggers in Boston. And it seemed to me inherently this is an interesting opportunity. And so I wanted to get that out there, get you thinking about it, getting anybody else who has an idea about this thinking about it, and maybe we'll do a little bit of formal question asking on the web during the week.
I have a quick reply.
Of course.
I think there have been earlier instances of sort of spontaneously organized coverage that could be sources of inspiration for such a thing. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Number two is picture simply an assignment system.
Yes.
That a lot of people are cooperating in.
Right.
And what you do is you make a map of what you would like to cover if you were covering the mayor's race really, 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 really thoroughly,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And what that basically comes down to is a list of things and meetings and that you should go to,
yes.
Events you should cover, and people you should talk to, right?
That's right.
And you just rough out, what if we could cover everything, right?
Right.
Then you just turn that into an assignment deck.
Absolutely. We came to the same conclusion.
Then you recruit every person you can.
Right.
And if you only get 15% of it, you still got more than the Herald's got.
That's correct. That was exactly the conclusion we came to, was that all that's needed is get the bodies and then come up with a fair way of distributing the workload. And then let's, you know, see if we can get it covered. I would move to Boston, although I'm not the right guy to do this, right? I mean, from the software.
I would doubt very much, though, that the Globe doesn't have anyone covering the mayor's race. That doesn't sound right to me at all. That does not sound possible.
That's what Nico told me. It's possible that he's exaggerating, I suppose.
All right.
But, you know, things.
What was your next item?
What?
You said you had another item you wanted to raise before we got out of here.
No, I got the two. One is that we have a name for the podcast.
Oh, the name.
The
right,
name,
yeah.
Right. And that's a big deal. We were calling this the Laundry Podcast up until then, which was...
Laundry okay, Notes, yeah.
Fine name for a podcast, but wasn't really what we were talking about, right?
No.
All things considered, I think rebooting
we were just emphasizing our humble origins. Come on,
well,
get with the
I
program.
I went grocery shopping today, so I'll tell you, I didn't do the laundry, but...
I spoke at the University of Maryland this week.
Well,
at the J School.
I think then that's a good thing that we changed the name of the podcast today, then, because,
yeah.
All right, man. Rebooting. I think we've got to do this again next week. What do you say?
You're on.
Okay, Jay. Thanks so much.
Good night.